latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 145th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and it was a wild one. Now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Can Country House rebound in 2 weeks with another solid performance, or will a new face smile at Pimlico? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plug down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide beginning Friday, May 10th, and an updated version that includes Eddie Olchek's picks May 16th. Open a new ExpressBet account and get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
3-8-4-6-4-3. Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law break in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, you have to answer to, whoa, the guns of Brixton. The money feels good.
We're back at the races.
Your life, you like it well, but sure your time.
Hour two, coming to you from Pimlico, and Johnny D joins us. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you? You're already in Baltimore. You must have had a crab Jones.
It's not just the crabs either. It's the crab cake and soft shells are running. It's a bumper crop. I saw that the blue crabs are up 60% from a year ago. But also the underrated specialties, pit beef sandwich.
Really?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, bet. I always look forward to going out, and Baltimore is just, I bet the whole Inner Harbor area, what they've done with that over the years has really been a tremendous improvement. And, you know, they have a little Italian section there, and I always want to get in there. And, you know, I have all these plans before I get there. But then you get locked into events and schedules, and all of a sudden I end up leaving saying, you know, I got to be more like Vic. I got to get here Monday. the only way to eat my way through this week.
Well, and every time I come, I manage to find a few more little nuances. But pit beef, we've known about forever, and it's very local. I mean, it's basically roast beef, and it's, you know, wafer thin, you know, on a bulky. And there's a handful of, you know, particularly good places. And the other thing that I learned in the last couple of years, the snowball phenomenon, the snow cone.
Really?
Snow,
yeah,
cone.
A little too chilly for snow cones so far.
But please, it's gotten ridiculous. I mean, but the snow, there's a snow cone culture here that is unique to Baltimore. And that includes the ice machine and the syrup company. And it's exceedingly local. Nowhere else. I can't think of a place where, you know, snow cones. Although there was that great Kojak. Remember Kojak with the old-fashioned, the ice block in New York City with the you'd have the shaver and off the ice block. I'm old enough to remember that.
Yeah. Although we call it water ice where from my neighborhood. And actually, I think I stopped you there.
You did.
Pops,
you did.
Water ice stand. Yeah.
At Pops. Yeah.
It's a little more concentrated than a snow cone, as we used to call it. Where they have, you know, when you think about it, it was a shaved ice. And then they'd pour flavoring on top of it. That's how they used to do it. They'd be in a cup, and they'd pour flavoring on top of it, this big, big ball of ice, and then flavoring. And you think about it, that doesn't sound very appealing, but it was good on a hot summer day. You couldn't get enough of that.
I love it. You did. That was right around the block. We got to see the Johnny D. Homestead. With the brass plaque in front, you know, the unbelievable.
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't realize that right behind Betsy Ross's house, the birthplace of Johnny D is one of the most popular Philadelphia tourist attractions.
Exactly. Well, this is a popular tourist attraction for me coming here, Johnny, and I've. You know, I've said this repeatedly, and people have heard the story. My first Triple Crown race was the Preakness for, you know, a number of them. And then my buddy Phil and I started going to Belmonts, and then later, starting in 2001, you know, got to my first Derby, and here we are 18 straight later. But I've seen more Preaknesses than I have any other Triple Crown race, and literally, you know, a denizen of the infield, and that's why I'm so defensive about, you know, the attacks and the deriding of what the infield does, because, you know, not only did I come out of it, we also, with Carolina Barbecue, we had installations in the infield, and I saw the development of, you know, kids from drunken high school and college kids into, you know, people that, you know, started to learn to play and then ultimately, you know, got involved in the game in other ways. And it's such a special atmosphere. And, you know, we've we're in this situation where there's like a sword of Damocles that seems to be hanging over the head of this facility and this the future of this race. I mean, I just had Sal Sinatra. I wasn't, you know, Sal can't answer every question. He's running the racing side, but you know, we got a couple of hints about, you know, where things stand, and you come here and it just feels like every time we come here, it might be, you know, not that this is going to be the last Preakness at Pimlico, but it does feel so uncertain.
It is uncertain. It is uncertain. But it's also wonderful at the same time. I really do enjoy the Preakness, and your points about the infield, and now they've upgraded the experience with name bands and perform acts throughout the afternoon, and of course on the high end of things, you now have the chalet out there, and you have corporate areas. So yeah, you know, they've done the best that they could with that facility, but it's time. You know, we look at these sports. Baseball stadiums, football stadiums, you know, basketball arenas. They're not around 100 years. They're around 20, 30 years. Oh, we need a new facility. And it's true. You have to keep pace. Today's sports fan, even if you can't say, well, they're casual, what do we do the rest of the year? I don't know what you do the rest of the year, but you better be ready for that day, because people are expecting a level of experience that is, you know, equivalent to what they get at a major sporting event. Because after all, the Derby, Preakness, and Belmont and Breeders' Cups are our major sporting events in our sport, and we attract plenty of people who are not regular racegoers. So the experience has to be top-notch. And the facility at Pimlico is just too old. It's just too old. It's not, you know, it just, look, things get old. It's time to get a new one. You just have to make that decision. Now, is it going to be there? Is it going to be in Laurel? There are some, you know, I mean, you can go through that whole thing. I don't want to. But what I do want to say is I kind of like Baltimore in the sense that it is kitschy and that it has that history. Mm-hmm. You know, the thoroughbred history in Maryland, not just at the racetracks, but the breeding industry. And you know, if you go back Civil War times, Maryland has always been, you know, a wonderful horse-producing state, because they have, you know, they have beautiful open areas in Maryland. And, you know, you've got Baltimore, but now you've got D.C. down to the south, but pretty much Baltimore's got a lot of open area, and it's horse country. So it's history. You can feel when you walk in the plant, and you kind of imagine the guy standing there hawking the programs and the tip sheets, and you kind of harken back to those days. Maybe a shoeshine boy there, you know, a little kid with one of those Jeff caps on. I mean, you just, it oozes, and you go, you walk out onto the track, and it's not, there's no hilltop there now, but it's old hilltop, and you can just kind of imagine what it was like. And the fact that it's in a neighborhood, it's not isolated in an area where so many sports facilities nowadays are. This is, when they go down the backside, you see houses. You see, well, you know, as you're driving on both main roads to get into Pimlico, it's a neighborhood. Kind of like, I recall, Connie Mack Stadium was in a neighborhood. It was right smack in the neighborhood. And then they built this sports complex down where I used to live, down in South Philadelphia. And it's incredible, but it's all open sports complex area. The houses are blocks away. Anyway, my point is, if you add all these things up, and one more thing, when you, not just one more thing, but I'm going to mention one more thing that makes it great, is the people, not just at the racetrack, but the people of Baltimore are proud of this race. They know it's the time of year when the the national spotlight is on their little backyard. And the people at the racetrack go out of their way, and they have for years through different, you know, through racing sector, race director of racing and track operators and group sales and the, you know, the women that work downstairs in the offices and the cops that drive the cars. I mean, I don't think people are aware that when owners who are running a horse in the Preakness, they're given a car and a driver for the week that they're there in Baltimore. And that is just awesome. That's the way our horse owners should be treated everywhere. I hope after this big speech, it's going to continue this year. I don't know if it is, but I'm hoping to get there and to see them all lined up. And they're proud of their city. And those guys know. Those guys are, some of them are retired, some of them are active police officers in Baltimore. And they know the dark side of Baltimore, like any big city. But they also know the wonderful things about it. And they've seen the best of people and the worst of people. And that's good, because they keep the owners of Preakness runners out of the worst of people areas. And that's always kind of a plus. But it's a city, you know, it's a, look, Louisville's a city. I'm not going to pretend that it's not in Louisville. And Churchill Downs is in a neighborhood, too. So this is not singular. But Churchill Downs feels more, and especially since it's been redone, it feels more corporate. I don't know if that's right, or more modern, certainly, larger, more expansive. Pimlico, you walk in, like you talking about the elevator. You know, it's like most places you'd be, oh, where's this elevator? Oh, well, you know, what's going on? And when you go into Pimlico, you expect someone to say, oh, I don't know if this is working today. I mean, you'll get on the elevator, and the person in there operating it will look at you and say, I don't know if we're going to make it. Like, okay. You know, it's to be expected. This is not a recent occurrence. This is not part of the failing of the building or anything. This has been going on since I've been attending the Preakness, which is, what, 30, 40 years? I don't even know. So that elevator's always had a mind of its own. And you're right. Whether you're carrying your equipment or just trying to get upstairs, that's a hike. You're going straight up, and it's a real hike. But when you get up there, and you've done a great job of this over the years of taking some of the photos out of the files there, some of the ancient stuff, some of the historic, and putting it up on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever. You know, and as you walk down that long hallway that leads from the elevator to the or the staircase, whatever the case may be, to the press box, and you see on the side those years of program strip pages from the Preakness with the jockeys autographing each of their mounts, and you look at the, you know, the names of the horses that have won the race, and it's that there is history there. Now, you know, is it sad to turn your back on history, to give up, to walk away and go? Yes, but this is what happens. This is, you know, nobody, you know, we still have the Coliseum. They just don't play games there anymore. I'm talking about the one in Rome. You know, at some point you have to move forward and you have to grow, not just the sport, but also the experience for people who visit. And if Laurel, that answer, or whatever the answer has to be, I don't know exactly where that's all going to go or where it's going to end up, but Pimlico is old. There's, you know, historic, yes, but, you know, they don't have, you know, Congress doesn't meet in Philadelphia at Independence Hall. You know, I mean, things change. You know, we move on. So, That's how I feel about it. I just love being there. I enjoy it every single year. And I look forward to it. And I look forward to it. And the racing this year, wow, as you mentioned, Friday's card. Holy mackerel. They got numbers, that's for sure. And then I also heard you mention my weather experiences, that it rains either Friday or Saturday. Now, that doesn't mean the day's a washout, but you'll get some precipitation Friday or Saturday. Look, it's spring in the East Coast. That's what happens. You're going to get some rain. But it looks like this year, I am excited by the forecast. The weather forecast for Saturday looks great. And more importantly, Sunday looks great, and Monday looks great. And why is that more important? Because I notice in the East here, very often, the forecast will be like, I guess, a smidge behind. So maybe that beautiful day that Sunday is supposed to be, the beautiful day Saturday is supposed to be, will slide forward to Friday, and the beautiful day Sunday is supposed to be, will slide forward to Saturday. So I'm hoping that they kind of shift a little bit, that the weather forecasters are a little bit off, and the early rain that I see on Friday doesn't arrive, comes in on Thursday, and, we have a great Friday and Saturday at the Preakness. Because Friday's card, wow, looks very deep, very deep.
Johnny, a couple of things before we talk, before we turn to the guide and get a glance at what looks to be this field of 12 and some thoughts about how things have developed. To your way of thinking and your experience, because you've seen, as you mentioned, there's the evolution of sporting events that includes racing, that have been forced to move in various regions. Is a Preakness at Laurel the same race? Is it the Preakness? I mean, is it something entirely different if and when it ends up at Laurel? And I mean, and let's also recognize that if this piece of property is renovated and rebuilt, because they're not, as the study said, there's no way of saving this existing structure. It's going to have to be raised, and you're going to have to build a completely new racetrack, grandstand, clubhouse. So the race technically would have to probably, unless they did a tent diversion, and I suppose you could, but much like we're going to face in New York with the renovation of Belmont, there's going to be some upheaval. But, is a move to Laurel, does it completely change the legacy of this event?
I don't think so. I think it still stays the Preakness, and I think what happens is you begin a new era. You begin to make your own history, make history there at Laurel, and if we can... We can do the right things and grow this game and keep it flourishing 50 years from now. And you know what? We say, 50 years, it's not that long. It really isn't. 50 years from now, if next year is the first year at Laurel, which it isn't, but if next year is the first year at Laurel for the Preakness, that's going to be the beginning of a new era. And 50 years from now, someone will say, hey, they used to run this race, they didn't always run it at Laurel. They used to run it at a place called Pimlico. And that's what will happen. That's time moves on. Experiences change. I'm not afraid of it. It will continue to have its history. It's not going to change who's won this race. It's not going to change that it's the second leg of the Triple Crown. It's not, all those things are going to come with it. It's not going to be, if it moves to Laurel, it's not going to be that same Baltimore. That part of it, I don't know if you can bring with it. That part, I kind of have to agree with you. But it's going to be a new thing. I, I, you know, I don't know how it will find its identity. That's for Laurel and those folks to figure out how to give it its new identity. But it will find its new identity. And that's what it'll push forward. It won't be Pimlico. You're right. It will be different. But it'll be new. It'll be a new experience. That's the way I feel about it. Seems to be what happens when you look, you know, I told the story before, I think. I don't know if I told it on the air, but when I was a kid in grade school, and my grade school, you can look out the window and see, you can see the stadium. You can see the Phillies ballpark from, you know, from my grade school out one of the classroom windows. That's how close it is. It's walking distance. And when I was in grade school, when I was a kid, there was a movement. They wanted to build the Spectrum on that property. That property was, it was a drive-in movie theater. It was, you had JFK Stadium there, which was Municipal Stadium. It was called that before. It was like an ancient stadium. Old, kind of the old style, like an old style college football stadium, that kind of thing. And there was a movement to put the Spectrum in there. And the neighbors in, you know, the sisters at the school, the nuns, would tell us to go home, tell your parents, we're going to march, we're going to picket, we're going to fight this, we're going to vote against it, we're going to, you know, driving up sentiment to keep the Spectrum from being built in my neighborhood, because it was going to ruin the neighborhood, the traffic, the people coming in, all sorts of undesirables would be coming, walking by your house. And, you know, there was all these stories of Armageddon. That was from the Spectrum. Seats 17,000 people, okay? I said this someone the other day. Those people are rolling over in their graves right now, because down there right now, the Philly Stadium, the Eagles Stadium, the 76ers and Flyers Arena, concerts, it's all there. Comcast has built an event center there, like a bar, and it's become a sports complex. And all those people wanted to keep the measly little Spectrum from being built there. So, point of the whole thing is, times change, things move on, we find a different way. And you know what else? In that time, in my time on this earth, the Veterans Stadium's gone. It was built and demolished. So, yes, we turn the page all the time. Now, it's same neighborhood, yes, that's all true. But the history, is the history still there of Veterans Stadium? Yeah, you remember it. I remember it. We talk lovingly about experiences there. And also, you know, you make fun of it because it was so disastrous at times. It was such a, you know, that field that they had for baseball, the AstroTurf, the ball used to bounce like it was a Super Bowl, bounce off the infield. But times change and things improve and they move forward, and you got to hang on to the history, but you got to experience the new stuff. And the public wants the new stuff. In general, we want to be just if you just talk about connectivity nowadays, if you only talk about connectivity as part of the experience, we've got to have internet. We've got to have fast internet. We've got to have plugs so when our cell phones die, we've got to have outlets so we can charge them. We've got to have big screen boards with player information and you know, odds changing. And we need all this technology. Our sport is a technology-driven game. We need access to technology. So if you just look at that one area and even forget about the rest of the experience, foods, places to eat, places to drink, places to enjoy yourself, that also fits into it. But, you know, just one thing, connectivity now. The world's changed. It's different. You know, someday, well, they have it now. You're at your seat, and you hit it, you plug a thing at your seat, and you order food. I don't do that, but some people do. I see them deliver it. So, you know, time marches on.
All right. Well, let's march into the Express Bet Preakness Stake wagering guide, Johnny. We put out the initial missive on Friday, and in very short order, we had two new horses introduced to the race, and the horses that are going to have a considerable impact, notably the Brad Cox charge, literally, Warrior's Charge, $150,000, it should be noted, $60,000 to do the late nomination and $90,000 entry fee. So between Marshall Graham and partners and Saul Kumin, they obviously think it's worth, you know, ponying up that money, and that should not be lost on people. More importantly, there's real added pace, and that's going to provide a little bit of a wrinkle for what Kelly Rubley and Daniel Centeno were expecting for Always Mining. And now coach shows up, Dwayne Lucas, and Lucas is going to participate as well. And that another horse that could maybe press the pace a little. Some thoughts about what's happened.
Yeah, the race is certainly, you know, the complexion's changed a little bit. And some people say, well, you know, why do I want a guide that, you know, is now stale? Well, we're going to update the guide. The whole point is to get you started, get yourself familiar with the horses running in this race and what can be expected. And, yes, there have been changes. But what hasn't changed is we give you tons of stats and trends in this guide, like the average win place show odds. The average exacta, trifecta, superfecta payoffs, highest price runners in the superfecta, lowest price favorites the last 15 years. You know, lots of information that's not affected at all by the horses jumping in or dropping out of the Preakness race. As far as the handicappers are concerned, they're going to reevaluate this race after the draw. The draw is on Wednesday. They're going to reevaluate it, and there will be guide updates that will let you know if they've changed their thinking. This year, post position, it definitely could have an effect on how you feel about certain horses in this race. Where the speed is drawn, you just mentioned a change in the early pace scenario. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. We've got a section in the guide where we talk about meet the contenders. Gives you a little synopsis, a short synopsis, five lines of each horse in the race. And it's not all the way through, but it's the top contenders, you know, as we kind of saw them at publication time. And then we're going to update the entire guide on Thursday of this week, when we're going to have Eddie Olczyk will join in with his picks. Brent Musburger will have his picks. Added to our already fantastic roster, Bob Neumeier, Millie Ball, Jeff Siegel, John White, Dick Girardi, and, of course, Steve Bick, are all involved in this, and I will be offering up my horse-by-horse analysis and wagering strategy for the Preakness. That will be in my weekly blog that appears on the homepage of ExpressBet.com, and also it will be included as an update to the guide. So you've got all this great information. The guide is free. You don't have to be an account holder, but we'd sure like you to be an account holder. Open up an account while you're there. But if not, just grab the guide. I think you'll enjoy it. You can either print it out, or you can keep it online, download it, so you can keep accessing it in these days as we lead up to the Preakness, and then get a hold of the updates. Because as Steve just mentioned, this may change the outlook in the race, how the race is going to develop. And what I thought, there were a couple of things I plucked out of the guide that I thought were interesting. One of them, Steve, is what you mentioned. 14 of the last 18 years, the winner of the Preakness has come out of the Derby. That's a significant stat, I think. However, you could this year say that this is there's a weaker Derby representation. But as I look at the past performances and think about this race, improbable as those slouch, he's going to be the favorite, I think, and a deserving favorite. Some folks have suggested that War Will might run well in the Preakness, and I think probably he will. But I was not as enthralled with his Kentucky Derby performance as some other folks were. I thought after the incident, turning into the stretch, that he had ample time, ample room, ample opportunity to continue on and finish. Certainly he wasn't going to finish with maximum security, but he should have finished somewhere in the money. He just ran out of gas, in my humble opinion. And I think the fact that he'd been off all that time, his last prep race was a wasted effort because he injured himself coming out of the gate. And so that means he'd been gone for like 6 weeks, I'd say. 11 weeks maybe it was. So he'd been out of action for a while. Figured to be get a little tired. So now he should be fitter. I would expect him to be fitter. He rode the rail in the Derby, had a great trip. I didn't really find an excuse. Yes, he got bumped, but I don't think that affected him. But in probability, you look at his past performance lines, the long-range Toddy race bothers me. Because okay, that was off a layoff, but he made the lead in the stretch, and he got run down by long-range Toddy, who I still don't rank as one of my top three-year-olds. But for him to be caught like that, that was not an impressive race for me. Okay, so he needed the race. Going to be better next time. Well, he was. He went, toe-to-toe with Omaha Beach. An outstanding performance. And his trip in the Derby, it wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. It was kind of, he had nowhere to go. He was in a comfortable spot, but every time he kind of wanted to go, he got in between horses. He got kind of, I don't want to say jammed up. He got frustrated by where he was. The problem is when he got clear, he didn't particularly fire. He didn't give up either, though. I'll give him that. He just didn't like, which keeps me from loving him in the Preakness. I can't love him because he didn't, explode at the end when he got out and he had the opportunity, he didn't explode. Now, Preakness is shorter. That helps his case. As far as the addition of Warrior's Charge, yeah, he's new blood in the race because it's always mining. Wow, outstanding performances. His races, he's just blowing the competition away. And that leaves a big question, a big question mark surrounding him. What's going to happen, like an undefeated fighter? Of course, he's not undefeated, but like an undefeated fighter, what's going to happen when somebody hits him in the face? And this guy hasn't been hit in the face lately, but he will be in this race. He will get punched right in the nose in this race. And how he's going to answer, I just don't know. He's got that, he doesn't have to be on the lead, but whatever he does in this race, on the lead or off the pace, he's going to have to do it better than he ever has before in his life. And that's a big ask. He started 12 times now. And only his last two races really put him under consideration in this category. Yes, he's been winning races by open lengths, and he's looked sensational doing it. But figure-wise, he's borderline. But, man, and again, you can't say, he likes the track because he hasn't been on the track. He's a Laurel horse. This is Pimlico. It's the same state if you want to do it that way. But, he doesn't have that advantage either. So, while he's hard to go against, he's also hard to embrace because it looks like he's going to have some company now. He's going to face tougher competition. He's already run 12 times. And his last two races are really only the ones that you kind of would consider fast enough to threaten this field. I'm interested in, and I may change this, but I got interested over the weekend. I went back and I was buried in some replays, watching replays. just another twist of fate. I was not a, you know, look, he won his allowance race as easy could be at Golden Gate, and then he won the El Camino Real Derby as far as you can throw a rock, and he looked sensational striding out at the end. Again, competition behind him was not outstanding, but he looked awesome. But I like horses who have performed well on the particular surface, and he was a synthetic horse going to dirt, so I was very lukewarm on him, even though I knew he looked great. In the Sunland Derby and in the Lexington, he ran really well. He didn't have things his own way. He had some issues, not big trouble, not the kind of trouble where you're going to look at it and say, oh, my God, look at he got stopped. But he just didn't – he wasn't able to move when the jock wanted to move or when it would have been most advantageous for him to move. He was kind of in and among horses and, you know. But then when he got out, he certainly charged home in the Sunland Derby. And in the Lexington, he got clear. He made a run at the end, but Owendale had gotten the big sweeping move and had gotten the jump on him. So I'm kind of interested in him. The win end, I don't know. I'm still figuring that out. But kind of as an exotic, I'm figuring he looks like about 10 to 1 in here, 12, maybe more. Doesn't need the lead. Is comfortable up close. Doesn't necessarily need the lead, but can find one of those good stalking positions. And I'm interested in the post position draw with him. If he gets a suitable post where he can just maybe an inside post where he can sit inside and then, or an outside post. We've got enough speed where he can kind of clear and get over. He's interesting to me. Anyway, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, I'm a little miffed to be honest. The addition of Warrior's Charge really changes my whole. And I when it comes to Derby, I'm always quite willing to make the decision on the Wednesday before and live with whoever I particularly put on top. I've been known to adjust the final thoughts. For instance, Maximum Security, bubbled up and ended up picking him third and, putting him heavily involved. But this is more difficult because it significantly changes how the race might unfold. I mean, it didn't seem like Always Mining would have, more than a little bit of pace pressure, and now you've got potential, not just the addition of Warrior's Charge, but when you fold in Market King, he'll be forward, and he'll be part of the pace, to say the least. That's going to be the design. And John Velasquez getting named on Bodie Express is notable, too, because Velasquez's inclination is to get right in the race. And we've already seen that he's a horse that wants to draft. So, we've got a confirmed front runner in Warrior's Charge, and we've got two pace pressers that have been added to this equation. And so now you literally have to open this all up, even to horses – like Laughing Fox and Bourbon War, who are going to be coming from well off of it. Owendale, too. I think this moves Owendale up.
Well, yeah, and I thought it interesting that before Dwayne jumped in with his entrance, I thought it was interesting. Brad Cox, I said to myself, how did he convince someone to put up $150,000 to put a rabbit so the other horse can win? Owendale, to help the pace. I know that's not the case. But that's where my thoughts went. Like, look, this Warrior's Charge from Brad Cox, he could put a little heat on All His Mining and set it up for Cox's other horse, Owendale. So, yeah, it's a very interesting race. Very interesting race. Look, you're allowed to change your mind. I mean, this is not, and I don't think anyone would begrudge you if you change your mind and posted, you know, a brief update that says, you know, the things change and here's who I like now. That I would never begrudge someone that did that because it's part of the process with the guide. That's why we have the updates, the availability of the updates. That's why we refashion the thing, is because we understand it, you know. But at the same time, we want to give people a chance to kind of get into it. And I don't know if these two new shooters, well, I know, I'm not going to say new shooters because you hate that.
You just did. You just said new shooters.
I know.
Joanne, cut him off. That's it. You say new shooters is like this. It's like the anti-secret word with me.
I don't know. I don't know if these new horses that just came in the last couple of days are really going to be factors. Now, maybe our Warriors Charge has improved recently, but, you know, this race is going to be a nice race. It really is. And it's an interesting handicapping puzzle. It really is. You know, but I that's the other thing. You know, everybody with the negativity of Maximum Security not there, Country House not there, the Preakness is not anything like the Derby. You know, the first four finisher under the line aren't there, and oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, quit belly aching about this race. Maximum Security ran his eyeballs out. I mean, he ran his, you know, Will and I were talking, you know, when they were still, the inquiry was going on, and Will said, well, you know, he'll come back in the Preakness. Either way, he'll come. I said, you're not going to see him in the Preakness. It was like Ali Frazier. He laid his absolute body down. He was swarmed at the top of the stretch when you're supposed to be looking for a place to lay down. And he rebroke, and he kept going. And really, he ran his eyeballs out. So I wasn't expecting him back in the Preakness anyway. You say, well, Triple Crown, if he were going for the Triple Crown, he'd be there. I don't think so. I don't think so. He didn't win that race like American Pharoah or Justify or, you know, he went all in. He pushed all the chips into the middle of the table. I'll take one card, please. And that was it, man. So I wasn't looking for him to come back. Country House, yes. And not expected him to come back. The natural inclination was, yeah, we're going to Preakness. And then something came up. Well, we see that all the time. We saw that the two horses in the Derby in a matter of a couple of days. Boom, boom. Right close to the race. Out they go. Things come up. Things happen. And then I hear people, well, you won't see either one of them again. They're going to go breed. No, come on, man. The owners of these horses want to see them run. They want to breed, and they want to make money, but they'd also like to see him run, especially in these races, especially in, you know, the Haskell or the Travers or the Breeders' Cup. Don't be so cynical about what's happening. You know, yes, okay, I know the world's a terrible place, but once in a while you have to say, okay, what are we left with? What are we left with? We're left with a Friday card that a good stick shaker couldn't shake a stick in all these good races. And Saturday's going to be the same, and we're going to have good weather, and you're going to have a Preakness that's outstanding with 12 horses. It's a completely different Preakness. Look, they complain when you've got a 3-5 shot. Well, you can't make any money. You can't bet on this race. Now you've got a 12-horse open race, and, well, there's no Derby horses aren't in there. There's no star, but what do you want? What do you people want? Enjoy this race. Handicap it. It's going to be a challenging day of wagering on the races. And I'm guessing that most of the people listening to this show, that's what they like to do. So
yeah, exactly.
This is a great weekend. It's a great weekend coming up.
Johnny, we'll watch and we'll see what happens for Wednesday. Draw down. Are you going to be in for the draw or you're not coming until Thursday?
The plan is to be there for the draw. I'd like to see that.
Oh, good.
I love the draw. I love the Preakness draw. Touch base with all the participants, and it's good for me to see everyone in the industry. It's always a great park. And, you know, the discussion you had with Sal about previous places that the draw has been, you guys brought back a lot of memories, as you mentioned, you know, where it's been held before. It's always been fun. Previous draw is fun.
Well, Johnny, I will see you then. I'll see you Wednesday then. All right?
You'll see me Wednesday. And also, do an update, man. It doesn't have to
I will.
Be long.
I will do one.
Do a short update. You get it figured out Thursday or Wednesday. We'll do it Wednesday.
Wait for the draw. Now you need the draw because you want to see where the speeds line up.
Yeah, I won't be my deal until after the draw. Wednesday night, I'll do it. So, yeah, after the draw, do your update. And believe me, no one can hold it against you because, you know, we do the best we can when we can.
Johnny D, everybody, XB Johnny D from several perspectives, the future and the past of Pimlico and the Preakness and more. We'll see Johnny here, and Johnny, I'm looking forward to being able to actually sit with you on Thursday morning too for the breakfast.
What's happening then?
You got the alibi breakfast on Thursday, my first one.
I'm looking forward to it. The old Hilltop.
No.
And I'm really looking forward to it. It just adds the Preakness. And of course, your award is a big moment, but the fried chicken. If the fried chicken shows up, forget about it.
The fried chicken for breakfast. That's all Johnny's thinking about. Nothing else matters. We'll take a timeout. We're coming up toward the top of the hour. Michelle Lovell is going to join us, and looking forward to having Michelle on. She won the stake at Churchill on Saturday, the Mamzelle, and change of control. Big win for FedBiz, too. In fact, there was a couple of interesting stallion winners. California, we got to get to... out to talk about the Santa Barbara, because cause for commotion, Americane is back in Australia. He's not standing at Calumet anymore. However, he got his first stake winner with cause for commotion, Eric Kruljack and Giovanni Franco. That was on Saturday. So we got a few of these to do, and also Brett Santangelo. We've got to talk about Lanier and the Hanshin Cup, and might get Brett in here today. John White, too. Want to talk to John, and much, much more. Not that much more. We got an hour. So we'll do what we can with an hour. Back after this.